I'm Adam Coleman, inviting you to the fifth season of The Cosmic Library from LitHub. This season, we go on our tiniest reading adventure yet, into short stories in the U.S. But this too turns out to be almost all-encompassing.
I think short stories are essentially brief encounters with felt life.
That's Oxford literary scholar Andrew Kahn, who gives us a deep history of the short story. And we hear from The New Yorker's Deborah Treisman, who explains her work as an editor of short fiction.
You know, if you are melding with another person, you don't turn that person into you, but you get to know the ins and outs of that person. So, and it's sort of like that. I always feel involved with the stories.
We bounce around between the history and current life of short stories with the novelist Justin Taylor.
The nice thing about it going out of fashion is that it really frees you up to relate to it in a different way.
This being the Cosmic Library, we make sure to go way beyond U.S. short stories, too. Here's the Washington Post critic, Becca Rothfeld.
A lot of Kafka short stories, I think, gesture at or describe sort of nightmarish geographies or architectures.
And the actor Max Gordon Moore reminds us just how wild short stories can be. With a reading in its entirety of Wakefield, the intensely strange, classic Nathaniel Hawthorne story.
He had contrived, or rather he had happened to dissever himself from the world, to vanish.
Get ready for all that and more in a season about short stories, small windows into vast universes. It's season 5 of The Cosmic Library, available soon wherever you go for podcasts.
Welcome to the Maris Review. I'm Maris Kreisman. I am extremely delighted to be talking to Adrian Tomina today. He's the author of Scenes from an Impending Marriage, Shortcomings, Summer Blonde, Sleepwalk, 32 Stories, and the comic book series Optic Nerve. He's also an illustrator for The New Yorker, Esquire, and Rolling Stone. He lives in Brooklyn, and The Loneliness of the Long-Distance Cartoonist is his latest. Adrian, welcome. It sounds like you've had a very glamorous life. That's my takeaway. For reading your graphic memoir.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me on your show. Yeah, I think that's probably everybody's takeaway from reading the book, right?
Tell me a little bit about writing something autobiographical in which you are a character, and why we seem to remember the absolute worst things that happened to us.
Do you? Is that, are you saying you feel the same?
I recognize myself there.
Yeah. Well, I think this was a book that I had in mind for a long time. Probably even going back decades ago, because since I was always making comics, whenever something bad happened to me in my life, even as a child, as a teenager, especially as an adult, there was always some well-meaning person who would try and console me by saying that this will be great material someday. Mm-hmm. And usually it would just infuriate me and I'd be angry that they were not sympathizing with me and just thinking of it as a funny comic strip in the future or something. But so I think this book, like many of my other books, is some subconscious way of trying to make my life not feel pointless, to make that little that phrase about this will be good material someday actually come true. I feel like I'm generally such a negative, cynical person, but I think in some way this is sort of optimistic. It's sort of like, yes, trying to say, let me take those horrible experiences and try and make something positive out of them, which is sounds strange coming out of my mouth now as I say it.
But yeah, there is a level of comedy in it. There's a level of you absolutely understanding that there's a level of narcissism to it, but that's okay.
I guess. I think for the last several books of mine, each next book is always sort of in response to the previous one. When I finished my last book, which was called Killing and Dying, I'd been working on it for so long, and it actually took me about 7 years, and I just completely trained my mind to work in that mode of trying to come up with similar stories of a similar length and mm-hmm. a similar tone. And even after the book was published, I was still thinking of like, oh, here's another idea that would fit in that book, even though the door was closed. And I ended up with about two or three of those stories in mind. And I thought, let me put those in a drawer for now, because I don't think the limited appeal of my limited audience does not want, I don't want to tax them and do like Killing and Dying Part Two, you know, like right after, at least not just, right after, not on the heels of it.
I'll only speak for myself, but open that drawer pretty soon.
Okay. Thank you. That's nice. That's nice to hear. But I really do, for my own sanity, I guess, if not for unimagined audiences, I kind of want to do something different with each book, sure. at least different from the one prior. And so the idea of doing a black and white autobiographical memoir comedy kind of thing felt about as different as I might be capable of. You know, I'm not going to do a science fiction adventure story or something. So it seemed like it was a good choice for a next book for me.
And it just so happens that loneliness is such a major theme in the, I mean, it's in the title. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking to so many authors during the pandemic who have this experience that they've been writing by themselves all alone for so long.
Yeah.
And then when their books come out, what in that moment that you're supposed to be social and hugging friends and enjoying it, it's also kind of, it's lonely.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think I had that experience for maybe a day. I think it was sort of the whole process of coming to grips with what releasing a book right now would look like was really slow. I was just talking to someone and I was saying that what a lot of the movies about pandemics and disasters have always gotten wrong is that everything is announced and clear at once and you suddenly realize what the new world is. It's not, and for us it was like this drips and drabs of like, let's push it back a little bit, let's delay it, let's change it. Oh no, it's canceled. And you know, and everything just keeps slowly evolving like that. So I had a lot of time to think about what the release of this book might look like. And when it was finally decided we're just going to pretty much cancel everything, I think I had about a day or two of feeling disappointed. And then very shortly, I started thinking about how awkward this book would have been to go out and promote in person, and how I was dreading going to the various cities where I knew that people I depicted lived and there was a chance that I would run into them. And I also knew that, I mean, this happens a lot, but more than any other book, I knew this would be the one where people would want to know, like, who's this about? Who's that? And did this really happen? And so I suddenly felt this relief that I would not have to go out into the world and talk to strangers about such an intimate book. I guess, you know, mostly I'm disappointed because it is my once or twice a decade chance to travel around and see friends who live in different parts of the world. So I was sad to lose that experience. But other than that, I have this feeling like, you know, I wouldn't mind if this was the way I promoted books going forward.
So much of the book is about the promotion of other books and comics. Yeah. And my main thought was that you have a scene at what I assume to be, you know, I won't ask you, the Javits Center. And when I was reading this the first time, I believe it was just announced that the Javits Center had become a hospital.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess there's nothing wrong with conceding that, yeah, that was the Javits Center. There's a lot of things that I'm nervous about identifying to specifically, but who cares about that? Yeah.
And I was thinking about just the idea of dying at the Javits Center.
Right. Yeah, that you could have
literal,
figuratively and literally died at the Javits Center. That anecdote, there's for some reason, a lot of anxiety for me about conventions, whether they're book industry conventions or comic industry conventions, and something almost always goes horrible at these at these events for me. I don't know if it's just me or if everybody has. Maybe it's just the law of averages. You have so many human interactions in those spaces that something's bound to go wrong. That Javits Center one. It's hard for me to sometimes talk about the anecdotes within the book because my version that's in the book has now completely overwritten actual reality. I do remember that one was actually basically like I did it in the book, and my very minimal event was completely drowned out by this incredible. This was one of the hardest. This to me really reminded me of some of the limitations of the medium of comics, because it's an auditory thing that I couldn't quite. I was trying to convey visually, but it really was like the sound of a distant ocean, like thunderous waves crashing, but from far away. But it was so loud and muffled that my voice was obscured. And then, as we say in the book, we had to stop the event, and we were so curious what the sound was. The host looked it up on his phone and found that, who is it that I, it's one of the Kardashians.
One of the,
one of
them.
A Kardashian was there promoting a book, and that was creating, the sound I heard was the applause.
You know, we got get the big authors into that. And then also your publisher has a role in your book. Tell me about that.
He's actually not the publisher anymore. He,
Drawn and Quarterly. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Drawn and Quarterly is still my publisher. There was, a change in leadership a few years ago where the founder, my old friend, Chris, decided he wanted to go back to being a cartoonist rather than dealing with invoices and shipping and things like that. And then my friend Peggy Burns took over. So in the book there is an appearance by Chris, who at the time was my publisher. And I don't know how he feels about it. I'm a little nervous to hear, but other people have told me that I captured at least an aspect of him pretty well.
That's lovely. Tell me about, you're very honest about all of the criticism you've received. And being vulnerable like that sounds terrifying to me.
I think I've had a long defensive history of trying to short circuit my critics in a way by publishing negative letters in my comic. And this book is another example of that, where I'm actually quoting verbatim long chunks of negative reviews that I got either in print or in person. I think some people look at it like, oh, it's so bold of you, and I can't believe you have the strength to do that. But it's actually very, it's a childish and weak way of protecting myself in a strange way, I think.
And then of course there's a part of the book in which you admit that hiding behind comics is the ultimate defense mechanism.
I mean, going back, part of the reason that the book spans such a big part of my life is because I had an experience that I described later in the book that sent my mind back into the past and examining a lot of these things that I show in the book. And I one of the many depressing takeaways for me was that since I think I was probably 2 years old when I first started making comics. Supposedly there's like kind of fake comics that I was making then before I even knew how to write, but I knew that there had to be bubbles with something that looked like words in them. I think maybe this is true of all hobbies if you delve deep enough into them, but I think it's pretty clear that for me, comics was something that appealed to me and that I was a fan of and that interested me, but also was the cheapest and easiest coping mechanism of going through family upheavals and moving to new towns and starting in new schools. And just as my life evolved, I think I found ways to adapt that same process to new avoid and distract from new challenges.
It still seems to be a method through which you process the events of your world.
Yeah, I think it's a way of processing. And in recent years, I think at least with the last couple books, it's become a way also for me to express things that I think are uncomfortable for me to do directly. And that was definitely clear with Killing and Dying, which, and when I say express things, I think to the average reader, it's nebulous and metaphorical, but I think to a handful of people who know me very well, that I think they see very clear messages to them in these books. And I think it's most explicitly so in the new book, where I sort of contrive ways to basically write letters to my daughters and give heartfelt speeches to my wife and things like that.
I think I'm used to a level of sarcasm or in your writing. And so it really...
Yeah, you have a... Seems strange, right? that was an intentional challenge I posed for myself. I think with going back to my book, Shortcomings, all of the books that I've done since then have been a little bit of me seeing if I can rise to a challenge that I find intimidating. So Shortcomings had to do with addressing topics that had been posed to me that people had asked me about for a long time and that I had sort of defiantly avoided. And then that was me throwing myself right into it. And Killing and Dying had a lot to do with, can I move beyond the type of story that I used to do about young single people in the Bay Area, and can I write more from the heart about the things that I actually was feeling by that time about becoming a parent and concerns about mortality and things like that. And with this, there's a long tradition of confessional autobiographical cartooning, and I've been a fan of that work for a long time, but I've mostly avoided it as an artist. And so this was one of those challenges that I always felt was on the distant horizon. And I always thought that if I was ever going to approach it, that there were certain obligations I had to myself and to the form, and that I didn't want to do a 200-page autobiographical book that in the end didn't really say much, or you didn't learn much about me, or I didn't reveal anything. So it was by design that I steered it in directions that almost from the first page that I felt uncomfortable with. And I had to trick myself into thinking that maybe it would never be published and maybe it wouldn't be seen by anyone. So to just do it for the pure experience of getting it down on paper.
Tell me about, you've portrayed your wife before in your comics. Tell me about doing that again with your wife and children.
I've never had a studio, so I've just always worked at home, even in the midst of having two children, in the midst of everybody being home for quarantine. I've just always worked in the corner of a bedroom, and so all my work is always visible. The page that I'm working on at any given time is just sitting on a desk, and the previous pages are usually tacked up on a bulletin board above my desk. So it's kind of my wife and kids just have sort of instant access to whatever I'm working on. And with this book, I thought it was very interesting the fact that for the first 100 or so pages, there seemed to be very little interest from the family. And then when I started approaching the present day and my wife appeared as a character, suddenly she started reading each page and giving feedback and commenting on things. And then when the kids appeared, I mean, my youngest one is probably a little too young, but my 10-year-old daughter was coming home from school and going right to the drawing board and seeing what I'd done. And in fact, at a certain point, she surpassed the point that I was in drawing the final draft of the book. And I found her in my studio and she'd found the little folder that I did the rough draft of the book in. And she had skipped ahead and was reading the rest of the book in its rough draft form because she wanted to see how it ended. So, I haven't heard a lot of feedback from any of them. You know, I know that they were interested to read it. They might be harboring some sort of grudge about how they were portrayed or something. I think my wife might feel like she's generally been portrayed as kind of a Pollyanna, like that I use her as a foil to my cynicism and negativity. Which in some ways is accurate, but that's only of course one small dimension of her personality.
Sure.
You know, I am a little nervous about how my kids will feel about their portrayal when they're older and they look back at this, and if, you know, Nora is embarrassed that I drew her having a tantrum in Penn Station. Like that.
What can you do? She was hungry.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Love to ask what other books you'd recommend reading.
As soon as we finish this call, I'm going to walk over to Community Books and pick up my order that I placed. And that includes the new novel by Otessa Moshfegh.
Yes.
I think it's called Death in Her Hands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that. And also a book called Ant Kind by Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Have you read them? You've read them?
I haven't read it yet. It's one of those things where I'm so frightened to read it because I have so much invested in wanting to love it.
Yeah, that's right. So that's what's on the horizon. But I also did want to... I figured comics are a little bit of a novelty on this show, so I wanted to mention a few things. And I brought them here. One of the books is 365 Days by an artist named Julie Doucet, who is one of my favorite artists just in general, not just within comics, but just one of my favorite visual artists. And this is a book about, it's basically she did kind of like a visual diary entry every day for a year. And it was definitely an influence on my new book. And also, I just wanted to mention my friend Richard Sala, who he was one of my oldest friends back in California and kind of a mentor to me. And I've always felt that his work has kind of been underappreciated.
Well, not anymore. No, I'm just kidding.
I changed everything.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Maris Review. And check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.